Hi, everyone. I'm Dina Lewis, and you're listening to As Seen by Us.
Elevate straight to the pinnacle, rose from the bottom in intervals. Dreamed of the visuals and watch it come to life just like a miracle.
So on today's episode, I'm excited to have my dear friend and colleague, Eduardo Maria, join us on today's show. Eduardo is an actor, singer, filmmaker, and most recently, a singer and songwriter hailing from the beautiful island of Puerto Rico. He's released his first single, Suzanne, with two N's, last month, and is about to release his next single, Natacha, pretty soon. Eduardo and I met while living La Vie Boheme, to put it mildly. We both met as hungry actors, hustling the grind, working part-time jobs, and one of them, together, as ushers, for a prestigious Broadway company for the show Moulin Rouge. So yes, we met rather recently, but Eduardo was one of those people who, when you meet, you just know that's a person that belongs in your tribe. Here's why. Eduardo is not only a captivating storyteller, but also someone who is so optimistically grounded. Ironically, though, y'all not gonna see that side of Eduardo tonight. Oh no. We're peeling back layers here in references to Salvador Dali Make Me Hot by Jose Rivera. And hot in this scene is an understatement. I will say this, parental advisory is advised when listening to this scene. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Eduardo.
Okay, so you're leaving because I don't read books enough, don't know about Buddha and Allah and Salvador Dali?
I tried so hard to love what you love. See the purpose in it, to hate your enemies. I mean, really hate them. But I can't fake it anymore. Now, maybe if you could love what I love.
I think I'm common, but I'm not. I jump out of airplanes. I climb mountains. I swim the ocean. I know martial arts. I can survive in the middle of nowhere with nothing but a shoestring and a mirror. I can take apart an M16A2 and put it back together blindfolded. I speak three languages. I met the Secretary of Defense. I defended an oppressed country against naked aggression. I was in history. Is none of that any good anymore?
Of course it is. But it cost one of us a whole life. I followed you all over the earth. Lived in lonely little towns where I never knew the language. Where old German ladies looked at me like I dropped napalm on their babies. And the cold there. Cold like when you're abandoned by God. Cold like the fingers of a baby's corpse. Cold that fucks you and gives you a virus. Oh, and then nobody in the South can tell if I'm black or white.
You didn't get nothing back. You had parents wanted to haul your ass back to Alcatraz. You had intimate knowledge of the juvenile penal system when we met.
When we met, yeah. Your uniform had stars on it. Yeah, you were my warrior who looked at the sky and pretended there were faces of loved ones on the moon. But then the stars on you started to fade. God, why didn't I say something sooner?
A house, a car, protection from the sun, lots to eat, love. You get love because I stupidly, ridiculously, fanatically love you. You get that? You see that in the plus column? Should I repeat? It's the love, stupid.
Please don't throw that word around like a fucking hand grenade.
I'm sorry I love you and the army. I'm sorry I have two loves, but one, you might notice, is inanimate. And God of Soul can't really compete.
It's doing not so bad, I think.
What you really want is for me to, like, attach myself surgically to the hip. Well, here's the big Geraldo newsflash, Nana. 100% of me, not available in any store. Why? Because I need to be, and I won't even think about laughing. Someplace, whatever, that's my privacy, where you can't go.
This just in. I know.
I get that private thing in the field sometimes when I'm out there. You know, sometimes I can't feel all the previous wars. Feel them in my body, my chest. No wonder that's where they put the medals on. Out there training before they stuck my ass in Star Wars. I tried to even feel, you know, Korea in me, even Vietnam. Men doing impossible things together. Men agreeing.
Men.
Codes and rules on how to be. Instead of all the chaos puked on the world by eunuchs with no codes and no rules. All pussy-whipped, worried about exchange rates and big weekend warriors playing their mind games on the week, just lining from moment to moment like there was no absolutes for valor or manhood and freedom.
You joined the army because you was poor.
And I ain't poor no more. And I don't mean the Grand National Park outside. I mean in me, my mind. The war on poverty ended and I won it.
Okay, who's prouder of you than me? I just think you're only using a tenth or a millionth of this great, beautiful mind you run away from like the plague.
I hallucinated all the nights we had. Taking long baths, playing cards with our friends, and you're drinking beers, telling dirty jokes, your hand on my knee, big, big laughter.
We were drunk half the time.
You told me you wanted 8 kids with me.
I thought I did. Eduardo, that was amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. We're amazing too.
Thank you. It was so palpable. The tension.
Yes. conflict. That's what.
Yes. Yes, that's what makes a play very intriguing. Mm-hmm. So tell me, I heard your accent get a little bit thicker when you got mad, and I just, and probably inquiring minds also listening want to know, Do you talk in Spanish when you get past that point of being pissed off?
Yeah, because it's like, this happened to me a lot in school and grad school too. Sometimes they had me do the exercises in Spanish and then go into it and then go back to English. Because, you know, language is a powerful thing, you know, mm-hmm. It holds space, it holds energy, they hold a vibration. So, you got to be careful what you say out into the world, you know, because that way you manifest things. So it's the same thing with theater and when you're acting. So if you're, for example, me, that my first language is Spanish, it connects more with who I am, with my emotions and how I express them. So whenever I feel that I want to express something genuine, so my natural language comes in. And that's why it happens all the time. It's like we were joking about earlier, that Sofia Vergara, she has a, mm-hmm. you know, she has a TV show, and one of the quotes, famous quotes, is like, you know how frustrating it is to, you know, be translating everything in your mind. You know how intelligent I am in Spanish. Yes. I had a friend one time actually that we went to in grad school. Actually, he's from Portland, Oregon. And we went together to, we had a break, and we went together to Barcelona. And mm-hmm. when we were there, I met up with a Puerto Rican friend of mine who was doing grad school over there too. And, you know, I had, you know, since I was talking in English all the time over in London, I got, you know, to speak all the Spanish that I wanted with my friend. And then my friend, my American friend, he was saying, he's like, it's like you're a totally different person. Like, I don't know you. When you talk in Spanish and when you talk to people that you know, it's like you're totally different. Like, I'm like, who is this? And it's, that's, you know, that's something that I was like, oh, wow, and thanks to that, now I'm conscious. And sometimes I do that in exercises. I paraphrase the word in Spanish in my own language, my first language, and then I go back to it in English to see that and how it informed the internal life of the character.
That's amazing. And like hearing you say that, I feel like I can identify with that as a Black woman.
Yes.
And, you know, the term code switch. Have you heard of it?
No, I'm sorry. No, I don't.
No, it's fine. So code switching is pretty much you are speaking almost a different language, really dialect, when you are around certain people and certain places, mostly white spaces. At an early age, you know, English was my first language, but I was taught through the English vernacular that at home, we can speak, you know, in a broken, and I don't even like to use the word broken, because that in itself is white supremacy on wow. the English language, you know, but
yeah.
we could speak a certain way, dialed back, casual. But my mom was always like, language is power. Mm-hmm. When we go into these white spaces, you are going to be automatically assumed that this is how you speak 24/7. So it's important to show white people that you can speak their language.
That you can. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so for example, like a example of code switching, if I was at home and, you know, my mom said, do you have any homework? Mm-hmm. I would probably answer or respond, nah, we ain't getting no homework today. Okay. But if I was in a white space and my mom asked me, hey, did you get any homework? Oh, no, mom, the teacher didn't give us any homework today.
Oh, that's funny. I mean, sorry. It's, well, yeah, you can see the difference. Wow.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, I prefer the first one, the one that's closest to you.
Yeah. And it's just interesting because hearing you say how your friend observed that you are a different person speaking your native tongue, it reminded me of what I was just telling you about code switching, learning how to code switch at an early age. And if I'm honest, I still code switch to this day.
Yeah.
I think you know that working together at a prestigious Broadway theater as ushers, we had to speak a certain language dealing with patrons.
It's like that film. What is it? Sorry to Bother You.
Yes, I haven't seen it. Tell me more.
Yeah, no. Sorry to Bother You is the. I don't want to give it away for people who watched it, or you haven't watched.
Right.
But like you see in the trailer, it's about this African American man that goes into what is it? It's not telemarketing. The phone thing. I don't even know how to say.
Oh, like a call service or call center.
Yeah, and then a friend of his, another African American gentleman, tells him to use his white voice.
Yes.
And then he's starting to get success and everything else. But yeah. Another thing that was interesting that happened to me over there were lots of things, but it was, I tell people that it's crazy that I had to go to the other side of the world to be, not be comfortable with who I am in the English language, but kind of find myself over there and being completely free, you know, like what we were talking about earlier, that, you know, trying to be perfect and just letting my accent just fly, because that's who I am and that's okay.
I love that. I just hate that oftentimes we have to find permission from someone else to be ourselves and to bring all of ourselves into our art. And I feel like you already answered my next question, which was, does your identity define your art, or does art define your identity?
Both.
Mm-hmm.
Both. Yeah, it's a never-ending dance between the two, you know? Like in everything in life, it's all a balance. And I read recently, I forgot who said it, but it was, the quote was, you're always a student and a teacher. You're forever a student and a teacher. You know, you're always learning and teaching at the same time from everything you do. you know?
Yes.
You can learn. That's why I love art so much, where you can learn about history, about every subject, you know, in a very creative way. And sometimes you can teach in that way. You know, you can teach people and learn from them too, from their reaction to. Like my friend told me that, and I didn't even notice that. And I was like, oh, I thought I was always me, but I guess it's, you know, there's a difference. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to segue into that. There is a difference between a New Yorican and a native Puerto Rican.
Yeah, there is, which is kind of, how do you say, it's a sensitive topic to talk about with them, with New Yoricans. Yeah. But living in New York made me understand why. It's because I'm trying to bring that into my identity as an artist, how to resolve that, because it's like, it's not a problem. It's just the conflict is much bigger than us, you know? My conclusion is that it's a problem of identity. In the sense, is a conflict of identity where, like, for example, New Yoricans, they are, you know, they are Puerto Ricans, but their experience from a native Puerto Rican, and when I say native Puerto Rican, it's a person who has lived and has been raised, born and raised in Puerto Rico, their experience growing up, it's very different. Very different if you want to talk about, you know, like facts. Like you grew up in a different environment.
Yeah.
Like physically, everything. Just to give you an example, we grew up speaking Spanish. They grew up speaking both languages, English and Spanish, but predominantly English. We live in a tropical, you know, climate. They live in a how do you call it in English? I don't even know.
concrete jungle.
Yeah, exactly. We live in a tropical island. They live in a island, but it's a, you know, it's concrete. It's mm-hmm. it's not, they don't have, they have a beach, but it's not the same, you know, everything mm-hmm. when you come together, it's different. So mm-hmm. of course, and there's nothing wrong with that you're going to grow up differently. But the problem, and this is a problem, is that, you know, in the media, you know, in the last years, that everyone has had an opportunity to have a voice and have a space, which is wonderful. And I love it. You know, you see so many stories and you understand, you know, you learn about so many cultures. But when it comes to Latinx or Puerto Ricans, let's say, there is, I dare say, because I've seen the examples, that there is a wrong portrayal. Yeah. For me, as a Puerto Rican born and raised, there's a wrong portrayal of our community in the cinema, you know, in the TV and film and the mediums, and it's creating a wrong image for us. Oh. You know,
uh-huh.
And the image, and I don't want to say wrong, because, you know, then I'm saying like New Yoricans are not Puerto Ricans, but that's all they're seeing. You know, they're not seeing a Puerto Rican from Puerto Rico,
facts,
Spanish, you know, facts, and cursing in Spanish, or I don't know, you're seeing a New Yorican. And when you're seeing only that, that's not really telling this truth.
Yeah, it's the danger of a single story.
Exactly. It's like seeing one side of the coin, one side of the story. And this is when you see that the responsibility that media has, you know, that TV and film has, how people learn from it. And then, for example, when I go to New York, people expect me, if I say I'm Puerto Rican, that, which I am, they expect me to behave a certain way. They expect me to be a certain thing, which is not, because I'm, you know, I'm completely, completely different, you know, mm-hmm. from what they think I am. And if you're, what they're talking about is, you know, inclusion and all of that. If you're really talking about that, you really need to go to the executive, producer or whatever. You need to be really responsible about, you know, what you're going to do, what you're going to portray. You can't just say, oh, this is a Puerto Rican. bring him here. Let her do, or let her do whatever he or she likes. It's not like that, you know, especially for us, because we haven't had an opportunity really to have our stories told. You know, we're part of the United States. Let's be clear, we're a colony, but, you know, we haven't had that opportunity to really tell our stories, to see the truth. And what I was talking about earlier at the beginning, that there's a problem of identity. You see, the New Yorican community goes back to, started in the 40s, I believe, 40s, 50s, maybe 30s, I believe, when the Industrial Revolution came in and a lot of Puerto Ricans migrated from the island, you know, to seek out more opportunities in relation to work, get better pay. That's what the United States government sold to the Puerto Ricans here, because what they did is that the U.S. government, they raised, and this is history, what they did is they raised the taxes on land, which is on the land for the farmers, which most of Puerto Ricans were. They raised the taxes so they couldn't pay tax no more. And then they would, the U.S. government would take those lands and make them a private land. Yeah, they would buy the lands and have the Puerto Ricans go to New York City and then start working in the Industrial Revolution and everything. And then, you know, a lot of Puerto Ricans just went to New York and then they settled there and everything. And
I never knew that.
Yeah.
I never knew that history.
That's there's a great book called, it's in English and in Spanish, called War Against All Puerto Ricans. It's a great book. You can check it out there if you like.
Definitely want to check it out. Yeah.
So when I say that I understood the conflict of identity when I went to New York, is that I saw so many, you know, wonderful Latinx people, like New Yorkans, and like, for example, yeah, New Yorkans, that we talked about Puerto Rico and everything and this and that, and they told me, oh, I have an aunt there, I used to have a grandfather there, or this and that, and I see their desire to want to go back, but they don't know where to start, you know, because maybe like the family that they had here no longer exists, you know, and it's like, but I see that in them, and I see that desire of wanting to know more about their culture, or about their people, you know, and about heritage, but they don't know where to start, because, and I feel that conflict of identity. So that's why I believe they compensate on being very, you know, proud, which they should, of course, that's their heritage, of being, you know, really proud of who they are, you know, of their people. But at the same time, there's a difference. And me wanting to make peace with that, that's why I bring that to my art, you know, trying to be me as an individual, an artist, an actor, or a songwriter that has had the opportunity, the blessing to be in both worlds. I want to be, as an artist, I want to create that bridge between that community that wants to be a part of, you know, that wants to connect with their heritage. And yeah, I would like to do that with my music, with acting and everything else. So yeah, it's a wonderful discovery that I made there.
What makes you most proud? You were talking about the pride of the people. What makes you most proud to be who you are?
Oh, wow. That's a really good question. I think Puerto Ricans are a very endearing people.
Mm-hmm.
We have suffered through a bunch of circumstances that not a lot of people are aware of, and that they don't want to teach us in our school, but we later find out. And we still do, you know, but Puerto Ricans somehow always look for the positive in things and look to have a smile on their face and look to celebrate the joy of what it is of being alive. And I believe that's what makes me most proud. And just, you know, the mixture of different heritages. I don't know how to say that.
I think you got it. Yeah. Heritages, yeah. Or maybe we say cultures instead. Cultures
that came together to form what we are today, because we're a mixture of a lot of things. And when I'm saying a lot of things, like this, you know, the Taínos were here, that we were talking about earlier, that I will mention this quickly, that my dog is, his name is Siba, and Siba means stone in Taíno language. But we're a mixture of, you know, the Taíno people who were here, and then the Spanish came, and then they brought the slaves from West Africa. And then the French were here, settled here for a bit. And I recently took the DNA test, and it turns out like a huge chunk of my DNA, it's actually Taíno. I believe the second biggest chunk. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah, that's incredible. I love it. I actually taught inside Taíno Towers in New York City in East Harlem, aka El Barrio. And I remember that's when I started doing my research, because I didn't know what Taíno was, what Taíno meant. Mm-hmm. Why was the theater in the building named after Tato La Vieira? I was like, who is that? You know, and that's when I came across in my research and findings about the indigenous people of Puerto Rico. And I was like, that makes sense. You know, why the skin looks so nice and chocolatey like mine on some of the people. I don't know. I just always felt very welcomed in the Puerto Rican community.
I've always felt welcome in the African-American community. That's something I've always found.
Mm-hmm.
The States. I'm like, I understand. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like we're cousins. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I just, it says familia.
Yes. Yeah. It's like the same jokes. It's the same. Yeah. The same humor. Yeah. The same, I don't know. Around the world. It's, I don't know. It's something. There's spark.
It's something in the bloodline. Yeah.
I believe so. It's like, we're from different, you know, countries, okay. But we're somehow, I don't know.
So you said you're a songwriter. Can you tell us what song you recently released?
Thank you. I just released a song called Suzanne, with two N's, Susanne. It's on Spotify. You can find me over there as Eduardo Maria. That's my artist name. And I just released it about a month ago already. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm going to release another one called Natacha.
Yes. What's up with these women names?
Yeah.
He's like, well, yeah.
See, the thing is that I think Susanne was the first song that started this trend for me. And it was because, came to the realization that particularly for me, Eduardo, women have been very, very important in my life. I was raised by seven women in my house.
Wow.
So, and strong women, you know, strong Latin American, Hispanic, or Latinx, or I don't know the term now, women, you know, and they taught me everything, you know, everything. From, you know, how to study, how to, you know, everything, every aspect of my life. So I can say I've been really blessed to be raised by such wonderful, strong women.
Oh, I love that. Thank you, Eduardo. And I feel like that just segues beautifully into the last question I like to ask everyone is, how do you define hope?
How do I define hope? Mm-hmm. I think every time I open my eyes and it's a new day, you know, a new day, no wonder if you have to do homework, no wonder if you have to go to work 9 to 5, it's still a new day, you know, and you have the opportunity and the blessing to be here and do whatever it is you need to do in order to change your circumstances that you don't like, you know, in order to transform your life. Just having that opportunity of waking up each day, that's hope for me. Just having the blessing to, because you actually, if you think about it, you actually can't do whatever you want. You know, it starts with you. Yeah. It starts with having the opportunity to do so. And waking up every day, no matter if you're ill, you woke up a new day, you can start writing that novel that you want to write. You can, you know, start a new path if you want to. Yeah, you can do anything you like, you know, just by starting a new day. That's how I define hope, I think. Yeah.
I love that. I never heard it that way before, but it makes a lot of sense. Giving yourself permission to live in the newness of the new day.
Yes. Don't let life happen to you.
I say that all the time to my students. Don't let life happen to you. Let life happen for you.
Yes, exactly. Let life catch up to you.
Ooh, I like that one even better. Okay, songwriter. Come on and flex these skills on the podcast. Y'all go check out Eduardo, his song Suzanne is amazing. And Natacha, did I say that right? Is coming out soon?
Yes, October 7th. Yes.
Wow, soon. Yes. And can you tell them again your name that they can find you?
Yes. It's Eduardo Maria. So Eduardo as in Eduardo and Maria as in Maria.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Eduardo.
Thank you, Dina. It was such a pleasure, as always.
Thank you so much for listening today. If you want to hear more and become a part of our community, please find us on social media on Instagram at as_seen_by_us, and follow us there to continue the conversation and for some more cool and exclusive content. See you next week. Creative blessings daily, so no use debating.